Hey, Bro Nerds, we're out of the studio again this week due to, of course, Adam's move and some of us traveling. Bob is always working hard, but somebody's got to pay the bills, right? Anyways, we've got a special episode from the archives for you. It is Bob and Tyler actually hosting former host of Modern Sex, Dr. Beth, as well as Drew from Sexy Nerd Science. Enjoy the episode. We'll be back on our feet soon. Of course, you can come see us as we have a huge, huge space over at Ocon Expo in Omaha Council Bluffs, June 28th, 29th, and 30th, Mid-America Center. Come find us at the Project Nerd Pavilion. You can head on over to OconExpo.com to see our schedule and their programming, as well as keep an eye on Project Nerd for more information to come. While you're at ProjectNerd.com, pay a visit to those Amazon affiliate links. We're trying to keep the ads to a minimum. Of course, we're working with some sponsors and partners, but we don't want to bombard you with ad code and anything like that. So most of it's been removed from the site. Actually, all ad code has been removed from the site, but most of the unwanted ads have been. And you can keep supporting us by clicking on that affiliate link or anything we suggest here in our podcast, other brands, anything like that. Please check them out. In the meantime, enjoy this episode.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to the Nerdcast on ProjectNerd.com.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
I feel like I should say something smart.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling.
Only on Project Nerd.
That is one big pile of shit.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Planet Comic Con here at the Project Nerd booth. We are hanging out. Got some new faces in the booth.
Wait, I thought I was going to open it.
Too late. I already did it.
Hey,
I took
everybody.
The initiative. Hey, everybody, indeed. Drew, how you doing, my man?
I'm all right. Got a little stuffy nose.
Bob, how you doing?
I'm tired. I've been walking my
butt all over
all
the
over
floor
the
today.
Yeah.
What you think? See anything amazing?
Tons of people, tons of artists, tons of some really good costumes.
Nice. Dr. Laura, how are you doing this fine afternoon?
What up? I'm having an incredible time. Incredible time.
What's the coolest thing you've seen this weekend?
Coolest thing I've seen? I've seen like 10 Daenerys cosplays that were all phenomenal. One of them where she's like in her ass-kicking outfit, the one that's all black and kind of like metal and stuff. She looked incredible.
I dig it. It's funny you said Daenerys. I just got a text from a friend of mine who I think may have watched the first season. I'm not sure. He just recently had surgery, so he's been at home, laid up. And he just texted me. He's like, hey, I just started watching Game of Thrones. I'm going to try to catch up before the new season starts.
Godspeed.
To be fair, he doesn't have anything else to do, but that's a lot of Game of Thrones
to challenge.
Watch.
So
there was a schedule in January where you could watch basically an episode a day for three months up till Game of Thrones. However, we're people of binge watching culture now, so you just extrapolate that down to like three or four episodes a night from this point on. You might be able to make it work.
Oh well, what day does the new season air?
The 14th, is it?
Of April?
Right. April 14th.
Of April.
Yeah.
14th is a Sunday, so.
Then it works.
Yeah.
If it's 14th, then yeah, you have basically
two weeks
from tomorrow to watch seven seasons. And, I mean, how many total episodes of Game of Thrones is there?
I was going to say six in the first season, 12 in the subsequent seasons, I'm pretty sure.
Let us find out with the help of the internet. I know that you and Adam were trying to catch up, Laura. Your efforts fell apart.
Yeah, they did. Well, because we both started rereading the books as well. How many episodes are
67.
There?
67.
Oh, good. Well, we started
67
rewatching
by 14.
And rereading the books simultaneously, which is just too much. Martin.
That's a lot.
It's just too goddamn much, Martin. And so we were just really depressed. Like, it's just really depressing when you're completely surrounded by George R. Martin.
So 4.76. So you would have to watch, on average, five episodes a day if you started today.
That's what I was looking for
right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah, no problem. That's what I'm here for.
As a big commitment.
Math is your friend.
Algebra. Ugh.
Dig it. So, I don't know that I could watch five episodes a day.
I mean, here's the thing.
I could 100% watch five episodes a day. I don't think I could watch 5 episodes a day more than 1 or 2 days in a row.
Yep. Well,
see, here's the thing. You do 3 a night and then do 1 full day on a weekend and you make up for the other.
That's a lot of Game of Thrones.
I haven't
though.
Even finished watching The Umbrella Academy. How do you expect me to watch
Game of Thrones? Oh, my God. Really?
Oh,
I'm like 3 or 4 episodes in.
Oh, my God.
That was so good.
I couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, my friend has the advantage of he's literally doing nothing but sitting at home playing video games in a knee brace. So, I mean, conceivably, he has the time to do it. I'm not even talking about time. If I had the next 14 days off work, I still don't know if I could muscle my way through 67 episodes.
It's just the emotional energy.
Does your friend vape?
No.
Oh, he doesn't. He's not sitting at home ripping some thick cotton?
No, he's at home playing a lot of video games.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Just wondering. The stereotype I'm trying to make happen.
No, he's just sitting at home on the couch.
Okay.
Must be nice.
Must be nice.
So, aside from the Game of Thrones, obviously, we just spoke about Umbrella Academy. Bob, you're not done with it. Has everybody else finished it?
I think everybody else is done with it.
Have you seen it, Laura?
Yes.
Drew?
Yeah, Tasha and I binged it. Umbrella Academy, like, 2 days. Done.
So good. Yet another one of those things that it was so popular, I really did not want to like it. I'm turning into such a hipster.
You are such a hipster.
Well, see, here's the thing. I hate that about myself.
See, you're not a hipster if you were like, oh, I read the... You're not a hipster now until you were like, oh, I read the graphic novels when Gerard Way put them out.
Didn't do that.
So you're not
a
hipster.
College students, and when they want me to watch something or they think something is cool, I'm automatically like, no, I don't want to do that.
I'm too old for that.
Yeah. Yes. But sometimes, and I'll say it now, they make recommendations about shit that's legitimately good.
Well, see, but...
You guys, 18-year-olds know about some cool shit.
But that's just the stuff that's happening now. Like, that just makes you up to date with current culture.
True.
Where at this point, where if they were like, yeah, but the graphic novels were really a lot better, like, then that's a hipster thing that comes out. Exactly.
I don't know. I feel like being predisposed to something immediately due to its popularity is pretty hipstery.
No, that's true.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess my definition's like... I don't know what's the true definition of being a hipster.
I mean, I don't know that there is a true definition of it.
And the fact that there's no definition of what's hipster is the most hipster thing about being hipster.
It's true.
It's like you can't really define it. You can't put me into a box like that.
You have any hipsters it takes to turn into a light bulb?
I don't like labels. We don't use electricity.
You've never heard of it?
It's a pretty obscure number. You've probably never heard of it.
Oh, man.
It's a special artisan number that you can only get in certain places.
Lord. I love it. It's artisanal.
Speaking of, you'll enjoy this, Laura. There was a recent, and I'm going to blank on the school that actually did the study.
That's definitely a hipster thing of you to say. I'm not sure where I heard the statistic, but here it is factually.
There was... Now I'm going to, it's bugging me and I'm going to need to think of this. Anyway, there was a recent research paper done on basically counterculture groups, specifically groups that form their identity against rebelling against whatever is, you know, popular or whatever is mainstream. So things like punks and, you know, hippies and specifically hipsters they looked at and how those groups end up moving into a phase shift of conformity within their own group. To simplify basically how these groups are specifically aimed at fighting against everyone liking the same things and popularity and culture as a whole and fighting against that and eventually end up becoming
non-conformist
exactly
rule.
That.
Become conformist in their own bubble. Like they become
right,
their
a reflection of what they were rebelling
against. They
become
their own homogenous like thing. So this paper was very interesting. It was very like, you know, it was peer reviewed. It was very good. And it got sent to many publications and get published in MIT's like monthly journal of like scholarly research.
Right.
And when MIT published the article, they needed to look for a stock photo to put into it, and they chose a Getty image of a prototypical what you would think of as a hipster.
I know where you're going with this.
It was a gentleman in like a slouchy beanie with a beard and a plaid shirt on, like walking down the street.
Love it.
What you think of when you say, I mean, the only thing
when you say the word hipster, it's exactly what pops into
100%.
My head.
100%. So after MIT publishes this paper in their journal, they get an angry letter from someone who was the model in the Getty image photo, demanding that it be taken down because he had in his contract for like the photo shoot that they couldn't, his image couldn't be used in anything that would be termed defamatory, or sure, like he didn't want his picture being used in herpes commercials, or
right, so it was a fraudulent use of his image because
he had a contract with Getty Images saying that like that you won't use this for this. MIT looks and we're like, well, we don't see how being labeled a hipster is defamatory. Have you looked at yourself? But they had to, like, you know, cross all their T's and dot all their I's. So they reach out to Getty Images to make sure they're okay.
Oh, no.
Legally speaking.
Like, was it a different guy?
Oh, totally different guy.
Different guy. He got him.
Because
he got
all hipsters himself. Look alike.
Exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It was one of the most beautiful articles I'd ever read in my entire life.
Take down that picture of me. I'm such an individual. Uh-oh.
As it turns out.
That's not me. So
he wasn't even, from the article I read, he wasn't even a model. He wasn't like, he was just like, you can't use that.
I mean,
like,
yeah, not necessarily. He was just someone whose picture was taken.
Yeah.
He is used as a stock photo, but
right.
To sign away the rights to it, like the waiver stated, yeah. Hey, this won't be used for blank, blank, and blank.
Right.
And then when he saw the photo, complained, Getty's like, yeah, that's a totally different guy.
It's just some other white guy in a beanie. They're all the same.
It's a different white bearded man in a plaid shirt and a slouchy beanie.
Oh, it's fascinating. Oh. Well, we all want to fit in, right? Fitting in is the difference between life and death, really.
We want to fit in, but
we gotta fit in.
We can't sell out. You gotta fit in without selling out. I gotta be me. I gotta be a me that everyone else likes, so I gotta like all the same things and do all the same things and dress the same way.
Right.
But I'm still an individual.
So what's the difference between is hipster still the counterculture of the 21st century? Like, is that still, or is that even dated? To say that hipsters are the current counterculture, is that dated?
I don't know.
Now?
I feel like I don't know, like, what the problem with hipsterism, and it's true of every single one of these counterculture groups, is like you end up using one term to describe a large swath of people who got where they are for very different reasons. There are people who look like hipsters because that was stylish. There's people who look like hipsters because they were all about going back to like an artisanal, locally sourced whatever. Yep. Or there's people who are hipsters because, you know, I was into it before it was cool. I feel like it's become a catch-all. It's the same thing where you like, you use the term goth for kids who use pale makeup and black clothing, but there was a lot of different shadings in that range.
Yeah.
Or emo or hippie.
Ooh,
or
let's kick it back to high school when we first started like rocking a particular niche. Where did you guys belong with the high school cliques?
I feel like I fit in. Don't call me a nerd, because I am a nerd. But I felt like I fit in with a lot of people because I didn't. I was a theater kid, no matter what. But I had been a football kid in middle school, so I knew all the football kids. And then I didn't do football in high school, so I was still friends with those people, but I didn't do that stuff. So it was just like, I didn't have like a, I mean, I wore jeans, chucks, and a long sleeve t-shirt under a short sleeve t-shirt. I was like, that was just my look. I don't know if that's a hipster look or what it was, but I wore that like every day. Different colored t-shirt. It was like I was a character in The Big Bang Theory. It was the same outfit every day, just a different shirt.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was like that was it. That's all I did. That's where I fell.
Yeah. I was kind of like Drew. I was the sports kid, football. I was the theater and music kid. I was the debate kid.
Nice.
So I kind of ran the gamut
of
cultures. But and you know, when you're in a high school of about 100 kids in your class, I mean, I think pretty much everyone was a little bit of everything at that time.
Don't put me into a box.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely went to a very small high school. So, like, my graduating class was, like, 28 kids. So everyone was... There were definitely cliques, but you could move easily. I mean, I was on the football team and the basketball team and the track team, but I was also in band and choir.
Oh, my God.
I was also on the forensics team and the quiz bowl team. and I was in the Fringe Club. Like, you kind of
did.
And
those are, like, in a Venn diagram, those are all, like, separate.
Yeah, but in a small
bubbles.
School, it's not uncommon to do
all of it.
Well, it's on. I don't know if you did every, not necessarily everyone did all of them, but there were plenty of people on the football team who were in band. There was right. many people in right. the musical who were also.
Which seems counterintuitive, because how can you sit in the stands and in the bandstands and also be on the
field? Well, there's other things for the band to do than play at sporting events, Drew. I feel like that's a very reductivist view of the music that being put out
by a
high
school
band.
Wait a minute. Can I guess your instrument?
Yeah, go for it.
Ooh. Don't tell us. Just tell us if she's wrong. I want to guess, too.
I was a trombonist.
You were a tromboner.
I was a boner. I really, really wanted to be a drummer, but my mother would not let me. She said I needed to pick a real instrument, so I picked the trombone.
And then
my brother was old enough, he got to pick the drums and stayed in band for like 2 years.
I see.
I was in band for 8 goddamn years, and I was so mad that I had to.
I see you as a tuba guy.
No, not a tuba. I was definitely a trombone. But like I said, I never played in marching band.
Right.
Because I was on a football team.
Did anybody else do any band stuff? I like that select your instrument thing.
Yeah, it's fun. It's like a personality test. I was in band. I was first chair.
What did you play? Wait, I'm going to go with
piccolo.
I feel like you're a
clarinet.
Reed instrument kind of person. So I'm going to go clarinet, yeah.
Flute.
Ooh, it was either going to go flute or clarinet. You're in one of the first two rows.
Yep, it's what every girl did in high school. She played the flute.
If you were first chair, did that mean you had to play the piccolo sometimes?
Yeah, play the piccolo
the
sometimes.
The school piccolo.
For that higher register. I was also the captain of the cheerleading team.
You were the captain of the cheerleading team?
Yes, I was.
I could see that.
For
you
my senior
year. You are quite bubbly.
Yes, I am. Some people say that's
and
obnoxious.
Effervescent.
But yes, I did that. I never really identified with those people, though. I was definitely like a 90s, like a grunge kid, you know?
Like
flannel, like
gonna,
Nirvana.
Yeah, if you're going to talk about our looks, like I definitely look like I was an extra who walked off the set of singles. Like I was
rocking,
you know, earth tone flannel shirt that's one size too big over earth tone t-shirt over baggy lucky jeans and big clodstop and Doc Martens.
Yes.
Hair that's a little too long. Probably some sort of sterling silver necklace, probably a yin yang or something dope like that.
Oh my god, yin yangs.
My look was this, but with just a different colored t-shirt on top of this. The only reason I wasn't is because I have this pair of glasses on my deal. So, but yeah.
Were you in band?
I see Tyler, in sixth grade, I did an
puka shell necklace.
Yeah.
All right. Let's guess Drew's instrument.
Never owned a puka shell necklace, thank you.
I did. What was Drew's instrument? Only sixth grade, though.
Sixth grade. I was in sixth grade band. And then I played in show choir for half a semester because somebody broke his wrist. So I'll take two instruments.
You played two instruments?
Two different times, two instruments.
But yeah, I was a theater kid. And like forensics is basically theater.
Went right
too,
over
so.
That.
Recorder,
yeah. I remember, what was that, fourth grade, fifth grade that we did recorder? I think that was fourth grade you did recorder, and then fifth grade you had to pick an instrument.
Love it.
And then
love
fifth grade
recorder.
Band, sixth grade band,
so
junior high band, high school band.
I did clarinet for one full year because they only had one saxophone, and somebody already was the saxophoner.
So
you got stuck with
so
clarinet.
So I got stuck with a clarinet.
Which is like the lesser sexy reed instrument.
Could you guess
right?
Like
the
an
sexiest
oboe or something?
Reed instrument is...
It is definitely not
definitely the saxophone.
At a sixth grade, like, toxic masculinity level, a clarinet was definitely not the most masculine thing for a guy mm-hmm. sitting next to three girls to
nope.
play.
No.
And I was terrible at it.
Just breaking down boundaries.
What?
Paving opportunities for boys to play clarinet.
And then I played bass for a semester in high school for jazz band because somebody broke his wrist and couldn't play his bass guitar. So I learned the parts, and that was a cool thing I did in one semester of high school.
Yeah. I played bass guitar in a band in high school for like a hot second, like a band in some guy's garage kind of band.
Me
oh my
too.
God.
That's
oh my god.
That's how I learned to play the bass for show choir, but I can't. The name was something he came up with, and I was like, meh, okay. That's
name
fine.
Of the band?
Yeah, it's
Let's
real
hear
bad.
It. Let's hear it. Let's
it's
hear
real
it.
Bad.
Let's hear it.
It's Laughing at Obesity.
Wow,
it was
that's
so terrible.
That's
no.
It was literally the worst thing ever.
no.
I like, know. That'll get you banned from Reddit. And it, oh it must be God. Real bad if Reddit will ban it.
Oh, that's so bad.
It was. I was like, all right, I guess I'll play. Like, he was like, hey, you want to play in this band? And I was like, I guess. And he was like, okay, cool. And then I got there and he had this, like, Sharpie sign that said that. And I was like, all right, whatever.
Oh, my God.
My best friend and I had a band in junior high where we wrote a bunch of songs and had a band name, but never actually recorded anything or played any instruments or did anything. We just sat around
Amazing.
And wrote songs in a notebook.
We're in a band.
Like
we're,
all the good bands.
We just wanted to be, we really, really wanted to be Bush. Like, we loved Bush. That was our favorite thing in the world.
God, who didn't?
Like, Razorblade Suitcase, 16 Stone, even Deconstructed, didn't matter. Gavin so Rosdell was our hero. And her and I just sat around and wrote lyrics and notebooks in math class rather than pay attention.
What was the name of your band?
I mean, it is
you named
the,
it.
It is the cringiest
I don't
name
know.
That you can think of. Like,
oh, please.
Think,
yes, please.
I think seventh I just, and eighth grade, real, think they're really grungy in a small Midwestern town who's like 2 years behind whatever's in pop
culture.
Trash
can lid.
And think they're real edgy. What's that?
Trash can lid's a good guess.
No, we had some alliteration. We were maniacal mayhem.
Oh my God.
And we had such hits as Fatal Barbecue and Semi-Automatic Psycho was one of
them.
Oh
my God. I can feel your feelings.
Was a real fucked up song about school shootings, which
you
was
really
fun.
Fucked
oh
up.
Oh my
that
God.
My brother's friends started a band when they were in like middle school, and theirs was called Bloodbath and Beyond instead of Bed Bath and Beyond.
That one's ironically fantastic. Like I'm going to save that one for later.
They had like 16 like 2 minute songs, and it was just them all like screaming.
Are they looking for new members of their band? Because I'm interested.
I think they have left the bathtub at this point. So.
That's a shame.
They were the real life Crash and the Boys.
Yeah.
This song is called screaming. I'm Sad, so very, very sad.
It's not a race.
It sounds like a song Batman in the Lego movie would write.
Love that.
All right, so we talked about high school. What, I mean, okay, who did college? Did anybody do college? Some crazy college stuff?
I did college. Bob, yes.
I did college.
Laura did some, and then some more,
yeah,
and then some fucking
bit.
More.
I just did all the college.
Laura
I
did college
did
for
all.
The better part
I did,
of
I did
a
little bit
and
of
half.
College, but my college, God. A lot of my college stuff was just being at college without being at college.
That's,
I mean, that's
I think that's
the
way you're supposed to do college.
That's the important part of college, the matriculation.
What's that movie?
We don't really care if you
what's
learn
What's that
anything.
Movie where he just goes and sits in classes?
Van Wilder.
Is it Van Wilder? No.
I mean, that's certainly part of the narrative of Van Wilder is that you just, like, exist at college, but you don't, like, go to school.
I mean, Tommy Boy? Lots of people go to school for 10 years. Yeah, they're called doctors.
Happy Gilmore?
But,
yeah,
so,
college for 10 years for me. I was in college for 10 years.
That's a lot of college. Josh has been in college for 10 years.
Look at that face.
Dale went to college. Yeah, where's your doctorate?
Everyone knows it's Herbie Hancock.
Herbie Hancock. So,
oh, man. College.
Okay, so did you guys do any crazy awesome things in college? Or did you guys just jump right into Project Nerd stuff?
Project Nerd was after college for me. Did I do anything cool? I drank a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Probably too much.
Mm-hmm.
Went to some classes. Didn't go to some other ones. Built a couple airplanes.
Built airplanes?
I was on an aero design team for SAE, Ooh. Society of Automotive Engineers, that every year for competition we would build remote control airplanes from scratch and fly them. It's really
just
cool.
Regular. Cool. What's that right, brother? Which one is it?
Orville and or Wilbur.
There you go. Wilbur.
Wilbur.
I was looking for the Wilbur one.
I mean, they were significantly more more complex than the machines that, you know.
I don't know. They had a lot of designs. They were pretty complex.
I mean, we had computers and MATLAB and wind tunnels. And
so they did most of the work for
carbon
you.
Carbon fiber.
They did most of the work for you. Made shapes. Let's see. What did I do in college? I drank probably too much. I went to class. I did science. We did some pretty cool science. We found that people with anxiety disorders pay more attention to angry faces in their environment than they do happy faces. So that was pretty cool. We also found that people prefer the stink, the natural body odor of other individuals that are genetically dissimilar to themselves.
That's fascinating.
Wow.
Tell me more about that.
It's super interesting.
So basically, if the stink of you is different than the stink of me, I'd prefer the stink of you than somebody else with the stink of me.
Yes. I guess define genetically dissimilar.
So specifically, we were looking at MHC compatibility. So MHC, it's a collection of alleles that codes for resistance to disease. So essentially, someone who has different immunities than you do will produce pheromones through their natural funk that you find more appealing. So we sent people home with t-shirts, told them not to shower, not to wear deodorant, that kind of stuff. Get your like natural juices on it. Brought those t-shirts into the lab and had people smell them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so people preferred the stink of people that were genetically dissimilar to themselves, unless it was women on hormonal birth control. And then they preferred the stink of people that were genetically similar to themselves.
Was that one of those things where you I've actually heard before that being on birth control can cause you to totally change what you're attracted
to. Your smell profile.
Hormonally.
Yeah, like, if you're on hormonal birth control, you may be more attracted to people that are actually more genetically similar to yourself.
Huh.
Is there any studies that have been done? I mean, you may not know this. I'm sure there has. But any studies that have been done where people who like who start relationships on birth control, and then when they come off birth control, it causes any sort of like compatibility issues?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, but it's certainly a cautionary No more school.
You start dating in college, you're on birth control, you get married, you start a life, you get jobs, then you decide, let's have kids, stop taking birth control. I'm like, wow.
Oh, I hate you.
I'm not that into
everything
you anymore.
About you I hate now. Subconsciously, and I don't know why.
Including your stink, and I can't handle it.
Yeah, it's a cautionary tale. If you're meeting your mate while you're on hormonal birth control, maybe think twice. And if you're trying to attract a mate, let your natural funk fly, right? There's a reason why we still have hair in our armpits. Yeah, and it's to hold on to stink.
Wow. So do we think that's like an evolutionarily like developed trait to like try and...
It certainly makes
propagate
sense.
Propagate immunities.
Well, if people are attracted to people that are genetically dissimilar to themselves, they'll make babies that have more diverse immunities, right? And if hormonal birth control mimics the experience of pregnancy, it would make sense that you should be attracted to people that you're more genetically similar to. Surround yourself with family.
We're
right?
So all over here making super, super immune babies.
Yeah, just making super fit babies. Hmm. So that's what I was doing college.
I mean,
a little bit of science, a little bit of drinking, lots of degrees. Yeah.
It speaks to, I think, the world today. But like I was thinking about your study. I'm like, God, that is so fascinating. And then my head immediately went to, God, I hope no one like finds a way to twist that and be like, look, we don't need vaccines. We naturally create immunities by...
I hate to
bring everyone down, but that's immediately where I went with it.
Please vaccinate your children. Please vaccinate them. And if you're vaccinated, get another vaccination. Just vaccinate
the baby. Is that vaccinated?
Vaccinated.
Dang right it is.
Just get some more vaccinations.
Because you like it when kids live.
I love it when my kid lives.
Love it.
All right, Bob, what about you? Did you do college?
I was college, court, my first, my freshman year. I lived off campus for like the first semester. And then the second semester, I was in the dorms. And when you go to college, you got to live in the dorms. I think my GPA was 1 that semester.
Oh, wow.
It was bad.
Well.
But then I decided to grow up and
live on campus and...
Well, that's when
TA tell you can't drink booze after noon.
Well, that's when I went to college in California, did all my stuff out there. It's nice and sunny and the beaches are great, but I just wanted to get done with school and get out of there.
Yeah.
But
it's a way to do it.
I like that you said decided to grow up. I don't think I've gotten there yet. I don't think I've made that decision.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I think I'm running away from it, actually, on purpose. I can feel it creeping up behind me. I'm just running away in general. But I'm really afraid of growing up. I don't want to.
Every time Laura's looks like she might be moving into adulthood, she's like, nope. Gets a new job and moves away.
I know.
Exactly. Oh, I'm just going to sell everything and leave. Yeah. What's the fun in that? I don't want to grow up.
Well, that means you can go buy
new
stuff.
I'm a Toys R Us kid.
I just want to be a Toys R Us kid.
And I feel like maybe even to a pathological level, I don't want to grow up because, you know, anything that would put roots anywhere, right? Like buying a house, getting a mortgage, things that I perceive as being grown up things. I'm terrified of them. I want no part of it.
Yeah, now you're millennial showing again.
Oh, yeah. Let me put that away.
I don't want to put down roots.
Can't hold me down. I'm a wild horse.
I don't want to be tied to any one thing or place or city or anything.
I'll tie myself to that boy, but that's about it.
Yeah, well,
yeah, and he's going where you're going, so.
Yeah, I'm just bringing him where I go. Yeah. But yeah, like is luggage. Anybody else, can you guys relate to that feeling, right?
Oh, 100%.
This, like, pathological fear of adulthood?
It's one of those things when you're like, you know, you're a grade schooler or, you know, a grade schooler, and you see high schoolers, and man, they're cool. They got this stuff figured out. Then you're a high schooler, and you're like, oh, this is a fucking shit show. But college kids are like, real cool and into, like, they know all the cool music and get to go drink and stuff. And then you're a college kid and you're like, I have no idea what's going on.
See, my
adults, like your parents, like, they had real jobs and, you know, had kids and bought a house and did a thing.
Yep.
Like, they have it together. And then you hit like 35, you're like, oh no, literally everyone from birth to now is just fucking winging it and hoping it for the best.
Yeah.
We're all just faking it.
Well, my biggest thing is, like, I don't want to have something that, like ties me down. Like, but I want to have something that's mine. So it's like this like push pull. That's like I want to have something that I can make, create, build that's mine. But like, I don't want to have that stuck in that one spot for any number of reasons. So that's why I like almost really, really strongly latched onto the tiny house movement. Which is like, I could build a tiny house or build a, you know, whatever, and then I could take that wherever I go. So it's like, it gives me the best of those both, or the best of both of those feelings. So I was like, ah, but also, we have a family. So it's like, you can't have a family in a tiny house.
I mean, you probably could, but man, is it going to be crowded and intimate?
Well, I watched, when I did think about it, I watched a lot of those videos, like those documentaries, tiny houses, and like there's people with like three or four kids living in
a storage container,
500 square foot trailer with three levels and sleeping in different arrangements.
It's really a romantic kind of story, right? Like all those documentaries really romanticize that idea, right? Of making something with your hands, which, I mean, my God, does anybody know how to make shit anymore?
People who've built a whole house in the back of their pickup truck and then just, you know, travel the world and go. Or like Alex Honnold, the free climber who had a documentary, basically just lives out of his van, and it's like the idea of that
is super romantic.
I don't know. I immediately see those. I'm like, God, it would be so cool to like live in a sweet VW van that I've like super decked out and go to national parks
and then climb up mountains by yourself. How the fuck do you afford that?
Like Alex Honnold, honestly, has like sponsorships and is a world class athlete, but like all the other people, it's like.
But like mere mortals?
Yeah, like
that's
how do you
afford
that? Like, did you go do something else and save all your money and then do it? Or like, what? How do you support yourself?
How do you put gas in your house? I follow this guy who basically did the same thing, but out of a Jeep. And he took the whole second seat out of his Jeep, all the other seats, just the driver's seat, threw a cot in there, and basically just hoofed it for like 3 months and lived at his parents' house. Did all this, and he's gradually gotten better, and now he gets money from YouTube and all that stuff. Like, they monetize those videos, but, like, that kind of, like, free living thing is, like, both terrifying and appealing all at the same time. But like you said.
Absolutely.
You want to, like, you build your own house. You get to do that. You get to have nothing set in stone. But additionally, like, my problem is we do stuff like this.
Yeah.
Where it almost makes sense with the amount of money we spend on places to stay or places to go. But then also, I'm here and I buy shit like left and right.
Exactly.
And downsizing is the biggest thing that I could never do.
Yeah, I like my stuff.
It's because I like my stuff.
I like my stuff. I like my bed. I like hot showers and indoor plumbing. But at the same time, like, the idea is super appealing.
It's very romantic.
Right up until it's not.
Yeah. Well, so what's different between us and our parents' generation, right? Because I feel like the part of me that rejects being a grown-up is really just rejecting what my parents did, which their definition of success is acquiring things and debt, frankly, buying stuff that exceeds your means and acquiring debt. And I'm rejecting that, right? What's causing, do you guys feel that, or am I projecting that maybe this is something that I feel,
I think
other people feel?
I definitely think you have this, I'm rejecting, my parents didn't do any of that. Like my dad is like, I have the same truck since 1997. I don't need stuff. He collects, but only because at this point, he didn't raise me to collect. He raised me to be minimalist, and I reject, like, it's the same thing. I rejected that because that adulthood thing was like, oh, I don't need stuff. And I was like, fuck that, I need everything. You know, like,
I love stuff.
So, and then he kind of picked that up later on in life, like, but he only did it with one thing as opposed to, like, I do it with just, like, everything. But I definitely think that the rejection of your parents' generation, like whatever you saw, is a way to, I guess, rebel against, like, growing up.
Yeah, what you see them wanting, you then define yourself by not wanting that thing, right?
Exactly, yeah.
You feel that?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, things that I did or didn't do to, like, rebel against. I definitely, like...
Well, are they similar to what your parents
did? I don't know that I mean, I definitely went through periods of, like, you know, my parents are wrong and stuff like that. But I think, I don't know, I definitely... I don't know that I so much rebelled against my parents or rebelled against my childhood. I definitely rebelled real hard, even before I left for college, like, against the social mores of, like, where I grew up.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up like, the Southwest, like, in the Bible Belt, like, very conservative, very small. And I definitely pulled a 180 on that the minute I had the ability to and never turned back, so. But then that's also, like, but at the same time, I, like, think back and you see there is something to say. There is a reason that, I mean, there's, I don't know, I don't want to get, like, weird with it, but there's definitely a reason that, like, adherence to conservative viewpoints, and I don't mean this, like, in a weird political, like, Republican, Democratic, but just in terms of, like, the strict definition of, like, conservative and liberal viewpoints. As age increases, conservativeness increases. As education increases, liberalism increases.
Right, right.
Like, because I definitely would, like, think back to being younger and thinking about things my parents did or said when they were younger, and then, like, thinking back to the things they say now, 20 years later, and realizing, wow, that you've definitely gotten way more conservative. And I'm like, oh,
yes.
No, because you're older now, and, like, old people are conservative. Like, you're a liberal right up until you're a liberal when you're young and poor, and you're conservative when you're old and rich. Like, that's
exactly.
Just, that's how it works.
Exactly. But these days, and that's so frustrating, right? Because people call young people idealistic, right? I feel like people think that I'm idealistic and that I'll just grow out of it, right? You'll grow into being a conservative once you give up on this idealistic view of
the
world.
But, you know, these days, at least I'm seeing just that shift of, you know, of younger people becoming more conservative. It's, I don't know, it's just, you
know. I think that's almost a rebellion there, right there, against.
Yeah, yep.
It's, yeah.
Gotta be different. All my friends are a bunch of pinko hippies, so I'm gonna join the NRA and the Young Republicans.
There you go.
Ew.
Well, see, like, I have people in, like, my age group that are more conservative than I would have seen them to be in high school and stuff. And then, like, the people, like, my brother came out of high school a couple of years ago, so he teaches, like, dance and singing classes to younger people than him even. So these kids are still in high school, and they're, like, women's rights, and they're, like, super just, like vocal about literally anything that they can be vocal about. So I feel like they're not, it's not even more conservative. It's just more, it's, you're hearing more vocality between like the younger generation at this point.
And I think there's a couple different forks there too. Cause like you definitely see those people who get into college and go veer hard left. But then there's also that, there's that very specific vein of rebellion in like that college age kids between 18 and 25. So I see it. I used to see it all the time in academia. Where they veer hard into like, and I think it's a function of like America's culture of exceptionalism, but veer hard into libertarianism, or like, I can't tell you how many people I knew my age who were, you know, intelligent, well-educated graduate student academians who went hard into like Ayn Rand and Ron Paul and like that, like vein of like, and part of that is like, and that, and that's true of a lot of ideologues in that age, is like, especially if you live in the insular world of academia, where it's like you've never really, you you know a lot and you've learned a lot and you have an a huge array of skills, but you've never actually lived out in the real world.
Yep.
And we're like, libertarianism is one of those things that like everyone, I think, dabbles with at a specific age, like 18, 25, when you're
everybody in, tries it.
Like you're an adult, but you're not in the real world. And then you get, and you're like, no, this would all work perfectly. Like, just, why don't you guys understand this? It just makes so much sense.
Dale's over here pointing to himself.
And then you go out in the real world and you're like, oh, yeah, fuck, because people are terrible. Like, none of this would ever
people
work.
People are terrible.
Yeah,
that's people, why this
no,
won't work.
We need social safety nets and driver's license. Those things are important.
Oh, man, I love that. Everybody dabbles in libertarianism. Everybody tries it.
We all did it.
One time.
We all, like, read Atlas Shrugged once, or read a Ron Paul thing or something, and you were between 18 and 25.
Just like experimenting sexually in college, everybody experiments with libertarianism, right? You try it. And then most of us grow out of it.
And then you...
most of us.
No, you don't even grow out of libertarianism, I don't feel like. I feel like you go out into the real world, and you're like, oh, yeah, that would never
work. Oh, it's a
work.
Beautiful idea, but my it's God, I mean, like, as a psychologist, like, I know that people are, like, deep down quite terrible. So, I mean, you just can't leave people to
that's
their
the
own devices and
like,
assume they're going to do what's best, right?
The same reason, like, that communism or, like, various versions of communism have always failed. Like, the ideas of communism, to me, as someone far left, is like, yeah.
That could work.
Totally.
That could work.
Collectivism, this is such a good idea. And then you're like, oh, but yeah, people...
People. You give people power and then they get terrible and then
none of this will ever work.
So I'm gonna try and bring this full circle because we talked about Netflix right away. Did
sorry,
anybody
what?
Watch
Oh Tyranny.
No.
I thought you said purity and I got real worried there for a second.
Josh, you're not on this podcast. Go away.
Josh is starting a white power movement over the corner. I understand that you said tyranny, but when you raised your fist up, it sounded like you said purity and I got real worried.
We might have to set this entire podcast booth on fire.
So, I'm going to...
Josh is over there talking about the white genocide.
Oh my God, I will
I'm going to bring
explode.
This full circle because I want...
Josh, you can defend all. Yourself.
Not yeah. at all.
I'm just making fun of Josh.
You haven't heard him when he's not on recording. So, we... I'm trying to bring this full circle because we've been doing... What are we at? Like 38 minutes now? So we were talking about Netflix. Did anybody watch Love, Death, and Robots?
No.
I've watched a couple of them. I haven't watched all of it.
No.
No. It's another hipster thing that's going around.
I'm going to love it.
It's an anthology.
It's
I could be into that.
So it's all, there's 16 or 18 episodes, and they're all different. They're all just... Really
self-contained stories.
Self-contained stories.
No continuity.
I'm going to spoil one
good.
Because
spoiler alert.
It comes through kind of in the conversation. There's a sentient yogurt. It's a sentient yogurt comes through, and they create basically this whole like, bring me to your leader. We know how to fix the economy if you follow this path to a T. And humans. Fuck it up. And so
that's what we do.
And so the sentient yogurt is basically like, all right, well, we're out, and they take off and leave humans to like fend for themselves after they've screwed it up. And it's really like basically just like humans cannot be trusted even with a like step-by-step plan to do it because we are.
Yeah, because I don't really need to follow. Like, is there a step 2B where I get my mine? That's all that really matters. I need to get mine.
Well, I mean, really, we're just so poorly equipped to put into practice any kind of social or political action that will take care of populations at the size they exist today. We're designed to live in a world where we only see and interact with like 150 people.
Yeah,
so we're just not equipped to deal with a world that is now global.
We are literally not equipped to do this because we come in contact with 150 people a weekend when we do this kind of crap. And then
right, there's a total mismatch between the environment that we're designed to exist in and this one.
Yeah, because what is it? You can only technically like remember like 150 relationships or something like that. Then your mind starts to delete previous relationships or previous like people from existence, basically.
Absolutely. So we can't put into practice any sort of social or political system that's going to take care of gigantic populations of people. We're always going to be just a little bit too selfish because we're better nomads. I mean, our ancestors spent over 99% of our history on a long ass camping trip, right? We're much better equipped to camp than we are to do this.
It's also why we're really bad with long-term planning. Like anything past tomorrow is a bit of a crapshoot.
But it's also, it harkens back then to, tiny homes. Why don't we just get a covered wagon?
Oh man, that brings it back full circle. We're pretty well equipped to be campers.
Yeah.
Right? Just get rid of all your shit. Get a tiny home. Go into the woods.
But I like my shit.
Get rid of my stuff. It's holding you down, buddy.
What's her name? What's her name? She's also on Netflix now. Who wrote the book of the art of?
Yeah. Oh, Marie Kondo.
Marie Kondo. Does it spark joy? Does it not spark joy?
Exactly.
Wow. Exactly. I don't know. This Tootsie Roll's about to spark my belly up with some joy.
So, we can go back full circle back here to the Planet Comic Con.
We are at Planet Comic Con.
Yes,
that's true.
Does Planet Comic Con spark
joy? We thought we were at a college lecture there for a few minutes. So, what have you seen, Drew, today that's kind of piqued your interest?
So, I saw what he called a sci-fi rendition of Link. Kind of had like a Iron Man, Master Chief, like mechanism, like vibe to him. He had like plate armor and he was carrying a blue lightsaber. So that was really cool. I like that a lot. I got a picture.
That's really cool.
I tell you, for me, the best costume I've seen so far has been that one Pennywise. It was absolutely dead. It's just like right on target. They had the bloody arm and everything. That's really cool. The makeup was perfect. He or she did the voice. Oh, that is cool.
That is interesting.
That is neat.
It was really neat.
It was a very accurate. Just a very accurate depiction.
I the whole time everyone was talking, I was thinking, I'm trying to figure out something that I've seen that was really, really cool, and I've seen a lot of stuff that was really, really cool.
Did you eat any good food at the convention?
I will say that the new Space Camper IPA from Boulevard.
Oh, so good.
Like, sci-fi inspired Comic Con. It's really fantastic.
I'm not an IPA guy. Like, I don't. And so I found out it was an IPA, and I was like, oh, because I got a sample for Tasha, and I was like, oh, it's an IPA, I don't know how I feel about it. It was, like, not as bad as, like, my IPA, like, mouth thought it would be. Like, I don't like IPAs, but I was willing to drink it, so it's not terrible. I mean,
it's good. I definitely as somebody who likes IPAs. Hoppy, floral, tasty.
I just had
a bitter beer.
A nice.
That's a hipster thing of you to
gooey,
say.
I know. I was like, I liked IPAs before they were cool.
They had a grilled cheese sandwich stand here. It was just hit the spot. Of course, every weather stand was like lines.
I did have a turkey leg. That was good.
How was that?
Ate a turkey leg?
I was
shame on you.
Well, did you get a look at the chicken pot pies they had too?
They saw them. They were very small, and the turkey leg just spoke to me.
Yeah, that turkey leg.
That's calling my name.
Listen, it's just like being at the state fair, baby. Were there any fried cake and
fried Twinkies anywhere?
The ride on the Whirligo, and we'll be good to go.
The Whirligo. So what do we got to look forward to tomorrow? Anything?
I mean, we got more panels. We got more interviews. Yeah. We got more celebrities. We got more cosplay.
You, your cosplay? The lines here have been absolutely bonkers.
The lines for literally everything, whether it be food or Brandon Sanderson or, you know, William Shatner or Jessica Negri. The crowd here is huge.
Chris Sarandon's line is going up and down, up and down, up and down, and around the cosplay area or the guest celebrity area.
So and Carrie Ellis's was super long as well.
And he is inside his little tent.
Yeah, he's in his tent now.
He is in his little tent again. He hides in a tent so nobody can see him.
They had to add floor lines for the path for Jessica Negri because she had 6 additional lines, like loops, forth. For wow. Jessica Negri.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, what about celebrities? Is there any celebrity that anybody here is like really geeking out to just get a peek at? Have an awkward interaction with?
I would like to meet the Fonz.
Oh, I saw him.
Love
him. Boy, he is definitely aged. I got to look at him. He's got long gray hair. I just can't see him. See him from the past going, hey.
Well, it's funny that you say that because my first introduction to him as an actor was actually with Waterboy.
Kidding.
Yeah, so I don't think of him as this young guy. I think of him as the football coach in Waterboy, and so he looks exactly the way I remember him.
He's fantastic right now on Barry. Does anyone else watch Barry?
He just won an Emmy Award for that.
Yes.
This is so good.
So good. So good.
Who do I...
And he's amazing in his episodes of, obviously, Arrested Development. He's always fantastic.
Oh, he's hysterical. Yeah.
You know, going over there, I don't know, maybe it's me, I don't know, but doesn't seem like there are as many big celebrities here as you would normally see. I mean, yes, William Shatner, you got the Phelps twins from Harry Potter, Chris Sarandon and Keri Elwes.
Bonnie Wright,
she's gorgeous.
I think, and this is true, and I think as we get older, this is another one of those getting older things. There are a lot of really famous people at this Comic-Con. I think we're starting to reach the age though where the famous people at Comic-Con aren't famous for us. They're famous for other people.
Right. Exactly.
Like there's a ton of voice actors here from My Hero Academy, which is huge. I've seen a ton of cosplay. That's a very large television show. I don't watch it. I mean, I've never seen it.
I've never even heard of it.
And got a couple wrestlers, Rey Mysterio, who
Mick Foley is big for me. That's pretty famous.
Rey Mysterio, I talked to at Colorado Springs Comic Con. Really, really neat guy.
There's some that are really big for like younger me, like Dean Kang and Tom Welling. That's fantastic.
That's a big deal.
Yeah,
Michael Rosenbaum.
Say there's a lot of. See, I don't think there's like a current, like all these people are doing their own smaller things, but there's not like a Jason Momoa or
there's no Batista here
or anybody that's like somebody's got
somebody's
see.
Current, new and current. There's not somebody like that.
I mean, everybody, like I said, there's everybody's doing something now. Like you said, Henry Winkler's doing Barry or whatever, and all the voice actors are currently in their shows, but I just don't think there's, like, you don't have a guy that's about to release a movie out, like Jason Momoa.
Yeah, and I mean, at the same time, I don't know that you see those guests outside of, like, San Diego anymore.
Yeah. Well, New York Comic-Con. Jason was here last year.
Yeah, but he didn't have anything huge at the time.
Justice League had just come out.
Aquaman came out in December. Year.
Well, and that pushed him to the level that he doesn't have to come to Planet Comic-Con anymore.
I guess that's true.
He's outgrown us.
Because prior to that, he was one season of Game of Thrones and Stargate, you know, Atlantis.
And I've And I've seen, he was at Denver Comic Con. We were there out there one time.
Yeah, that was like 2 or 3 years ago, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was definitely
pre-Justice
League. But again,
that was in between Game of Thrones and something smaller than anything from the DC.
I don't know. There's still a lot of cool stuff to come, and it's going to be, we still got a whole nother day of this, so.
Wow. Wow.
We will be back with more live recordings of us going off on weird philosophical tangents and offending at least half of our audience. If
we don't
more,
even know where we're going, but we know it's going to be upsetting.
I mean, we're gonna make some people mad.
We're not sorry. I'm not sorry.
If it's not upsetting, then it's not good radio.
Oh,
I love it.
Right.
But once again, coming at you live from the Project Nerd booth at Planet Comic Con 2019. It has been me and Bob and Laura and Drew. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye,
everybody.
Goodbye.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of the Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.